This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
That's as well as Tyrone Mings is going to play. And it was brilliant, by the way. I had people on messaging me from work saying, oh, he's got to be called up for England. But he was fantastic. But that's as well as he's going to play. He's put as much into that Premier League debut for Aston Villa as he's going to put into any game this season. So, and I can't...
Well, it was good last season, though, Aid.
In the Championship.
Yeah, but he was good.
In the Championship. It's another level. There's a reason why, and it's not just injuries, why Bournemouth were okay letting him go. So I look at it and I think, yes, he's a very good player. I think they had to sign him. But there's an ability to crumble that we saw on Saturday with Aston Villa that I think will send them down.
And that's why I'm a wanker, I'm a wanker. And it does me good like it bloody well should. I'm a wanker, and I'm always pulling my hood.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
In towards Wesley, although McGinn's made the run in behind him. It's John McGinn. Rose holds him up, but he gets his shot away. And Villa have staged a smash and grab here. It's the Premier League new boys who strike first.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me for the autopsy of Villa's first Premier League game back in the big time, Mr. Max Stokes is back in town from Villa on Tour. Welcome back, Max.
Hello, good evening.
And we found a perfect guest, a new guest, fresh blood, somebody who will probably come on the show after Villa get beat because one of his trades is a fireman, so he'll be able to put out the catastrophes of people whinging, slagging off players on social media, etc. A warm welcome to Jim Goth. Welcome.
Good evening. It's great to be here in the My Old Man Said studio.
That's very virtual. We actually did a test show a few days ago just before the Spurs game, but I didn't actually, it was just going to be a test, but it actually turned out to be a proper show, which I didn't actually have time to get out. We talked about the deadline day activity and the transfer market as a whole, and I'll put the highlights of that out as a Mom's Patron bonus podcast this week. Coming up, we will discuss our first trip to the, they don't call it the White Hart Lane Stadium, do they? It's just the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Me and Mr. Stokes were there, opposite end of the ground. I had to sneak in their equivalent of the Holt End. I was Upper Holt equivalent.
Ooh.
So that was quite interesting to see the comparison. Nice. This week's 3 points, we'll be looking at things that caught our attention during the football week that don't have to be in the Villaverse. They touch on things like VAR, people getting done at games for texting. Also, there'll be the Scott Hogan touch count meter, which these guys didn't know what was actually happening in the show, so that's caught them by surprise. prize. I'm going to make the rules up as I go along because I was thinking about it's a bit predictable, isn't it? You guess the number and then the other person goes one side or the other, which kind of gives them a bit of an advantage, I think, there. Too much of an advantage. Yeah. So I've got a new format, which is in my head as I speak, 75% crystallized. So give me a few minutes while we do the show for me to work out the exact rules. But hopefully it'll be a bit more fun. Right, let's get into the 3 points. Number one, Mr. Max Stokes.
Yeah, this is a bit of a funny one. This was a Hull City fan that got told not to text during the game. They played Reading at home, I believe it was, last Saturday. And apparently during the game, I think it was at halftime actually, an undercover security guard, as well as a normal looking steward in a high-vis and all that, came up to him and told him that he could face being ejected from the ground because he was just texting during the first half. I believe that the steward wanted him to be ejected for texting because he thought he was contacting betting companies because he could tell them how the game's going and et cetera, et cetera.
Called court signing, isn't it?
That's the technical term.
Yeah, the
technical term. Unauthorized data gathering.
Yeah, to influence bets. It's like having the Stasi undercover security. I mean, there's police spotters at games, which are basically undercover police who go around the local pubs and everything to spot who the normal ringleader hooligans are and where they are, and then they obviously feed intelligence to the rest of the police force. But this is kind of it's a bit too far, isn't it?
I've actually had issues at Hull before with the stewards. They're very forceful. Even when somebody's like marginally standing in the aisles, they were like, get back. And we were just like, oh, come on. Like they are a bit weird at Hull. Been there a couple of times, which is a bit weird.
I've been a few times. I mean, the last time there was hardly anybody in the stadium. So I don't know what the big uproar was. I suppose they haven't got anything else to do because there was no Hull fans there.
But apparently the guy who was texting, he said himself, he was mainly texting his girlfriend about what he thought of the Hull forward Tom Eves haircut. So it was all simple, nothing to do with betting companies. So that's just a weird one.
Has Tom Eves gone for a full Grealish as his hairstyle?
I don't even know who that is, so I couldn't tell you.
But I noticed Grealish blonde highlights in his hair, didn't he, at the Spurs game?
Oh, yeah, he's dyed his hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely a change going on. I've seen a few things on social media where they're comparing him to a goat, or is it a ram, with the way that his hair is compared to the horns. Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous.
The moral of the story is do not send texts to your girlfriend about Jack Grealish's hair at Villa Park in the upcoming game against Bournemouth because undercover security may eject you. Right, point number two. Is it me?
Yeah.
Point number two, VAR. Everybody's talking about VAR, moaning about VAR. The funniest thing at the Spurs game before, I don't know if people saw this on TV, but they did this intro video where they had Alan Shearer explaining VAR. Did you see that, Max, at the game?
I didn't, no.
It was a video of Alan Shearer explaining the principles of VAR and what's going to happen in the game, you know, when decisions are called out. And I was thinking, this is hilarious because Alan Shearer for the last few years on Match of the Day has been slagging VAR off and saying it's a complete waste of time. And here he is being paid by the Premier League to do their in-house promotional marketing videos, which I found hilarious. Anyway, the upshot of this is, basically Wolves have been howling about VAR and old Nuno Santo said that it's going to affect the spirit of the game. They had a goal ruled off in the 0-0 draw against Leicester, but it was a goal that there's a new rule now. Any goal scored, this is to quote the Premier League, any goal scored or created with the use of a hand or arm will be disallowed this Premier League season, even if it is accidental under the laws of the game. Those are the laws. Deal with it, Nuno, because it wasn't a goal. I mean, I haven't actually seen the incident, but I think the corner came in, was headed goalwards, and it hit the arm of, is it Willy Bolly at close range before Dendonka shot the rebound past Schmeichel. But it's, you know, it's hit somebody's arm on the build-up, so automatically it's no goal. So, but in the context of Villa, I mean, what was your experience? I thought that it was really swift at the Villa Spurs game. It almost like it was happening in the background while the game carried on.
Yeah, as someone that was there, well, when they were talking about VAR in the past and it was first coming in, I was like, it's not really going to be great for those people at the ground because they don't really know what it is. If you're watching it on TV, it's all fun and games. Yeah. Like you know what's going on. You can see the instant yourselves. But at this Tottenham Villa game, I thought it was really good. I think there was a couple of instances in the second half with like a McGinn penalty or McGinn red card, things like that. And they put it up on the big screen telling us what was going on. We didn't see the incident, which is fair enough, but they told us what was going on. And it was fairly fast, to be fair. I was happy.
But it was like, I think I mentioned off air, it was like there was like suddenly these bonus points suddenly out of nowhere. It's like, oh, penalty review, oh fuck. And it's like, fuck, we might get a fucking penalty from nowhere. And then the funny one was like sent out of nowhere as red card VAR decision, and you're thinking, oh fuck. But it is, but it adds that little it's not like the game stops and everybody, you know, you go off to get a pint or something while the decision's being made. It's almost like in the back of your head while it's going on. I thought it was pretty good. It's pretty swift. What was it like on via TV, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, sort of when you're watching it and obviously, it comes up on the screen that they're making a VAR decision, but it was pretty much the same watching it on TV, really, where it was quite smooth, and it was, you know, and sometimes you didn't actually realise yourself that it was going on until, and even the Sky commentators are like, okay, well, they're going to, you know, something's gone to VAR, and then you just see the standard shot of a referee with his ear, with his hand to his ear, and then you kind of realise what it is. Yeah, I mean, obviously, the benefit of watching it on TV is that you can actually see the incident in the flesh, and you kind of know what the decision is going to be before the decision is made. But I actually thought the same. I actually thought it was quite smooth, really. I was quite surprised.
Yeah, and I think that probably because you don't watch it on the screens, which I thought was a surprise because I thought you would be watching it if you're at the game. But I think the fact it adds to the suspense because you don't see it with your own eyes, so you don't know which way it's going to go. So it can come out of nowhere.
They said they're not going to show it on the big screens. I can't remember who said this, whether it was the Premier League or not. They're not going to show it on the big screens because it might cause animosity within the fans or something. I think they said something along those lines.
No, it could trigger, if they get it wrong for some reason, then it could really kick off. I mean, we've got used to referees messing up and you kind of get on with it, but, through gritted teeth. But if you had evidence, then it's going to boil the blood, shall we say. But yeah, it's funny that managers would moan about VAR now, even though the actual goal was disallowed for an actual law of the game. I think it's better to have people moaning about things that actually are under the law of the game rather than a dubious decision, which VAR didn't sort out.
See, the thing is with that rule as well, it's pretty black and white, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's no grey area with that one.
And Brendan Rodgers was saying he was a massive fan of VAR after that, and that's the way it's going to work. You know, if it works for you, then you love it. If you don't, and it's going to be peaks and troughs in terms of whether you like it or not, because that's it will affect the game accordingly. But at least it's in the rules of the game. Right. Point number three, Mr. Goff.
Point number three is a funny little ditty for one of Dean Smith's former clubs, Walsall. So during Walsall's 1-1 draw with Forest Green, one of the Forest Green players went down injured on the pitch, and the Walsall fans just started singing, "That vegan bastard is eating our grass." Brilliant. I love chants like that because I'm always the guy that kind of thinks about chants like that about half an hour after it's happened and it's not funny anymore.
So, yeah, no, it's good to see vegans now playing football. That's all I can say. But there's been progress. But yeah, no, it's when they're witty like that, it doesn't matter if there's swearing and stuff. Obviously, it upsets the football authorities. But if it's witty, it's witty.
Yeah.
Especially from Warsaw fans. I mean, come on, it's not often humour comes from that neck of the woods. The only humour from Warsaw are those concrete pillars at the Bescot Stadium. Me and Chris Budd he got tickets, I think he got free tickets or something to like Italy versus England under 17s or something. So I thought, oh yeah, go on. It was a beautiful summer's day. So we went along and the ticket was right behind a concrete pillar. So you were sitting there and literally in your face, your legs were almost around the concrete pillar. It was a fun, I just sat there laughing. I couldn't believe it. And I was thinking, no wonder you got these fucking tickets for free, Chris. I mean, obviously it wasn't a sellout, so you can move and sit, but I just couldn't believe that you would sell. I mean, there's restricted views. Normally restricted view, you just move your head like 1 inch to the left or right and you can see everything. But this was like...
No, that's just no
This
view.
Was like zero, no zero view. View. Anyway, sorry, I'm picking on Warsaw fans there. Before we go on, I just want to say a massive thanks to the people who make this podcast possible, the My Old Man Said patrons, and thanks to the patrons that have signed up since the last show, Phil Hood, Paul Farrer, Andrew Bickley, Tor Christian Storvik, Dale Butler, and Rob Bick. Thankfully, I haven't been sabotaged with made-up names. Please do also support the show and the website. We've now got Rockin' and Rollin' with the bonus podcasts, which appear weekly. And also, I'm looking to do a Patreon bonus on the website as well in the upcoming weeks, so stay tuned for that. Please go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the Patreon link to see how you can join people on your same wavelength as a My Old Man Said patron and get access to bonus stuff. Thank you very much. Right, let's go on to the game at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. What was your feelings going into this game, just very quickly? Was it like a free hit? Let's see what happens. Or did you think that we needed to get something? Because Spurs going into this game actually had a few big hitters out. Son wasn't there. Dele Alli wasn't there. Eriksen was on the bench. None of the new signings was on the pitch. So in terms of if you're going to do something against Spurs this season, I think they'll be a well-oiled machine by the time they get to Villa Park. Or did you just want to see signs of progress and let's see how it goes?
Going into the game, I think a lot of people were saying if you're going to play Tottenham, this is probably one of the best times to play them. They haven't got some of their big boys like Son. Like, realistically, it's one of the big six teams, Champions League finalists away from home.
I'd say top four stadium, sold out.
Well, yeah. I think they'll come third, but you know, whether it was a free hit or not, Dean Smith says we're always going to have a go, and I wanted us to have a go, and we did. But yeah, I wasn't disappointed at all coming away from the game.
But looking into the actual lineup, I mean, I think there was genuine surprise there when we looked at the fullback positions and saw our old friends Elmo and Taylor there. I mean, was that a shock to you, Jim, to see those two in?
Yeah, massive. I think with all the signings we made over the summer, you just expected to see more fresh faces within the lineup, didn't you? And I think that, to be honest with you, El Hamadi wasn't that much of a surprise to me. I did have a feeling he'd stick him in for some reason because he has still got a bit about him and still got a bit of pace. And I thought it wasn't too much of a surprise with him being in there, but Taylor was a massive shock. I just thought, especially going on the back of all the pre-season games where he did try to work with Gilbert and Target, I did expect Target to be in there, to be honest.
Was you surprised, Max?
I was, yeah. I saw it on the big screen. And like Jim said, I wasn't majorly shocked with El Mohamedy. I was shocked that Gilbert wasn't even on the bench because I thought he'd be injured. But Dean Smith said after the game, he just straight up just left him out. But Taylor was the one as well because he's played Gilbert and Target all pre-season. So he must be trying to work on something there, and he just switches it up and goes with Taylor. I was surprised. Yeah, it was a bit of a
Yeah, because I mean, my kind of reasoning was we're going to be on the back foot against this team, and I was thinking probably Smith's thinking about. I mean, he referred to it in the press conference. These were three of the back four that. What did they do? Concede eight goals in, is it 15 games or 12 games on the back end run that we had, and so. They knew each other as a unit. So obviously, if we're under siege, it's better to have a unit that knows each other and potentially trusts each other rather than... I mean, if you looked at the Leipzig game, I thought the back line at times were a bit disjointed and kind of all over the place. And Tom Heaton got them out of jail a few times in Germany. Mm. So I think that was his potentially his reckoning there. But at the same time, you're thinking, well, the only way to... If you're going to try to beat Spurs is obviously to catch them on the break. And does Gilbert offer you more pace to do that on the counter and, you know, potential overlap there?
Yeah, well, you think so. And the thing is as well, obviously during the pre-season games, that's what he was offering and that's what he was giving to us. And that's why, you know, it was a bit of a surprise, but it was just Taylor for me. That was the, I think every Villa fan looking at that lineup was just more surprised with Taylor being in there.
But to be fair, I think Taylor did all right, as did, you know, the whole back four. I thought they played really well as a unit. At the end of the day, it was the midfield that was crushed eventually, and they just couldn't stop what was coming at us. But although
there was the first 6 minutes of El Mohamedy getting caught by Lucas Moura. And then that was it. It was like, oh, that's the wrong decision. Why did they stick him in there? And it's just like everything was just proven. But no, he went on to do well, as did Taylor.
Somebody mentioned that earlier on who I was talking to, and I totally forgot about that. The opening few minutes where you think, oh, we're going to get slaughtered here.
yeah.
But no, in terms of other decisions, I mean, I expected the three that were in the middle of the park just because Nakamba and Louise had only just come into the club and hardly actually trained with the team going into this game.
You see, that was a big surprise. That was a big surprise to me. That was with Lewis just getting his work permit and only being in the country for sort of like less than a week, pretty much. And the camera had a little bit more time to train with the squad. I was a bit surprised that Lewis was given the substitutes bench rather than the camera. I thought the camera might have been in there over him.
Yeah, no, that's what I thought as well. I thought he was more, if you had a number one or two at this moment in time, I thought Nakamba would be the man just because he's played, you know, in Champions League games against big teams like Atletico Madrid, Dortmund, and been successful. So I thought he would be, so I don't know what the position is there. I mean, obviously, Dean Smith didn't really declare his cards on that front.
No.
Trezeguet on the right, El Ghazi on the left. I thought in the initial stages when we were obviously, we limited Spurs, we defended really well as a unit in, you know, both midfield and defence. And they didn't really, apart from the initial exchanges, they didn't really trouble us, but we looked deadly on the counter. We looked dangerous.
Yeah, I think counter-attack, especially in the first half, is where we really could have hit Tottenham. I think the front three was good. I think Trezeguet was one of the brighter players we had. He looks very, very good. I think we'll come on to it, but I think he had a shot, didn't he, when it was 1-0. He should have done so much better there. But if he made it 2-0, then it might have been a different game. But no, I think the front three was good. El Ghazi looked bright, especially in the first half. Winning a few headers, to be fair to him, to knock onto Wesley, because he's still a big guy, isn't he, El Ghazi? So he can be a threat in the air. But no, I think that front three was quite good in the first half.
I mean, El Ghazi especially, he looked quite tricky, didn't he? And you could tell that Danny Rose was struggling to deal with him at some points.
Yeah, because Danny Rose, I mean, I was at the Inter game at Spurs the week before, and Danny Rose had a lot more freedom at the park. I mean, he was getting into the penalty box or the opposition and causing all kinds of trouble. So he was pegged back in this game because I was expecting him to be like a serious danger man. But in terms of Wesley, I mean, I was on the train back after the game, which was delayed by an hour and blah, blah, blah. But all I could hear was, oh, Wesley, he's shit. Oh, he's shit, that Wesley. Oh, he's fucking, you know, shit. And you just think, fuck, it's a typical...
It just winds me up, that opinion, because you just think, you know, going into this game, it was going to be tough for anybody on that pitch, you know, but...
What's these idiots on the train. What's your equation to declare him shit? Is it because he's a striker and he didn't score? Is this the simple maths that you go on? Because he was coming in a lot deep, but he was allowing, I mean, through his hold-up play, he drew out the defence to open up the channels for, like, John McGinn to obviously scarper through and Trezeguet. And, you know, this is how we were opening him up on the counter. So he played his part.
I think the frustrating thing he did, and I think the frustrating thing for a lot of Villa fans, I mean, especially watching it on TV, because you don't tend to get, obviously, the replays in the stadium, but he was going down very easily. And there were a few occasions where you kind of think that he could have held the ball or held on to it a little bit more, but he was going down a little bit too easily.
I noticed that as well, because I was with the Spurs fan, so I was joining in with the boos.
Get up, you pansy.
but
there was a lot of that, and it was frustrating to watch, because you would think that a guy of his size, who was especially brought into the team for his strength and obviously holding up play to bring other people into the game, and it was just a little bit frustrating watching him going down a little bit easy. And I think that is an area of his game that, especially when he watches these backs, I'm sure he will do, that he's got to do better. He's got to do better. But to draw a conclusion that he's shit, it's
it's ridiculous. Yeah. What did you think of old Wes, Max?
Well, the first thing I heard when I came out the ground walking down the stairs was that Wesley shit. And it's like, really? It's his first game, new team, new country, at one of the best team in the league's away ground. Like, seriously, what were you expecting? He's not one of these strikers who's going to score you 30 goals a season. He does the dirty work. And I think to some of the fans, that might go a bit unnoticed. I think he had a few bright moments holding up the ball, even for the McGinn goal. He shrugged off, I think it was Sanchez. So he created space for McGinn to go through, but he does the dirty work, and it might go unnoticed a little bit, but I didn't think it was his best game. But seriously, like, what were we expecting? I think if the more he grows into it, the more he learns the other players' traits and stuff, I think he will grow into it eventually.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's like when Kodja came on.
Oh, don't
that
start.
Was like, that was bad. Who's this Sunday League player? Because... I think
he didn't touch the ball, did he?
He had about six touches, but he was shrugged off a couple of times. And he looked, I mean, it's a tough gig, that lone striker, especially at the time he came on when we were getting pummeled in the midfield. But he didn't look like he was, you know, he played in, we obviously hadn't played in this league before, but he was looked like he was out of his depth, which there's a few exchanges when he got shrugged off the ball and he kind of fell over after a challenge. And you're just thinking, ah, dear, we should have got another striker in that window.
You see, he did come on and I think he tried to lay a pass back to Jota and it literally just went straight to a Spurs player, who then broke on the attack. But I think it was a little unfair of him really to bring him on, expecting him to do the same job as Wesley was trying to do. And because he's not that kind of player really, is he, Kodjo? He's not the kind of player you'd expect to come on and bully defenders. He's more of a skillful.
Back in the Championship, we would bring him on in circumstances, I mean, pretty much like this, where you wanted to kind of wind the clock down because you'd give him the ball and he wouldn't pass it. So he would engage with five or six of their defenders and run for a bit, go down a blind channel or whatever, but occupy them. But against Spurs, they just tackled him straight away. Only took one of them to get the ball off him. There wasn't like four or five running after him and chasing him, and he wasn't kind of running down the clock because they just dealt with him straight away.
Yeah, it was pointless.
I'd rather have had Keenan Davis on.
Yeah.
He's had some really good bright moments in pre-season. I remember at Charlton away, he held the ball up really, really well, and I think that's sort of what we needed. Like you said, Kodjo got bullied off the ball a couple of times. He just looked so weak and a bit not really up for it. I think Keenan would have done a good job.
Yeah. Another man that was getting the... I mean, he's just got a haters club, old Conor Hourihan. And I thought he was fine in the first half. He was playing above what I was expecting him to do. Because, you know, you think, well, they're going to come at us. And, you know, they've got a decent midfield. Well, they've got a decent team, full stop. And Hourihan, even in the Championship, he was somebody that Dean Smith would play when we knew we could, let's say, boss possession against teams. At home, you know, you would have him on as your what would be a defensive midfielder because he could play further up and because we'd have the ball and dictate the play. But I thought he was all right. Some of his passing was decent and, you know, he got us on the way of a few counters.
I thought exactly the same. I thought the first half in particular, I thought that he didn't really do anything wrong. He made a lot of interceptions. He generally held on to the ball and he picked out a few passes. And I don't think there's very much sort of reason there to slag him off, if I'm honest, because the first half he was probably as good as most people were on the pitch. And the second half, everyone was pretty much the same. His back's against the wall things anyway. So
this is it. I mean, people have their opinion. They don't like Hourihan and that's it. Until the day he dies, that's what they'll think about him. And you see it on social media. And Douglas Luiz came on literally 9 minutes, touched the ball 10 times. One of them was like a header out. That was his first touch, I think. And then just simple passes, you know, side to side. He just looked like, you know, Jean McCoon or something. There was no way you could make a decision on, if you didn't knew nothing about that player, because these people say, he showed his class and he was great in the short time that he was on. You don't know that. You can't fucking make one decision from what you saw from those 10 touches. And by the way, while he was on the pitch, we conceded two goals. So if it ended 1-1 and he was on the pitch and he tackled the fuck out of their midfield, then you think, fucking hell, he's good, even in that 10 minutes. But he didn't do anything because, you know, what could he do? And the fact is, you know, I'm not slagging him off or anything. I'm just saying there's no insight there. People are just going on, oh, he's Brazilian. He's from Manchester City. Pep Guardiola said something good about him. So he's much better than Hourihan. He showed his class. He's going to be playing against Bournemouth. It's like he didn't show jack shit because Spurs just bypassed our midfield at that stage.
His hair looked good, though.
Well, exactly, yeah. And it's just, you know, that's a certain level of football fan for you. It's like, come on, already building him up to be a god, he hasn't done anything. So if he isn't the player you think he is, then suddenly it'll be the same people calling him shit again.
Yeah, probably.
For me, Hourihan starts the next game on the back of that. I don't think he's done anything
wrong.
Yeah,
no, exactly.
The fans slagging him, he's totally unjust and not called for. And I think that, especially when you look at his stats for that game, you just think it's harsh.
I'd have to agree with that. I think I'd start Hourihan against Bournemouth. I think there's certain fans out there that just hate Hourihan because he's Hourihan. They don't really base on anything. Like there was a couple of times during the game where Grealish gave the ball away, Tottenham could have scored in for the second goal, I think. it whilst Grealish dwelled on the ball a bit. If that was Horahan, there'd be people all over Twitter now.
Yeah, totally agree.
Absolutely.
Even Wesley. Jesus. Yeah, you can imagine.
Yeah, it's just not fair. I think people judge Horahan before he's done anything. It's really not fair. I don't get the abuse. I'm a big fan of him. Just need to cut him some slack a little bit. Do you see the tweet he put out about that? That Villa fan, like 5 years ago, he said he'd never get to the Premier League. He just absolutely ripped
him. Who was
he
playing for, Plymouth in those days?
Yeah.
I can't understand the Villa fan taking this big interest in Plymouth. Is he from there or something? It's like randomly you tweet like some League 2 or League 1 player and go, excuse me, sir, but you have no chance of playing in the Premier League. Who the fuck are you? You don't need to know who I am. I'm just telling you, you've got no chance of playing in the Premier League. I've been watching you from afar. Bizarre.
But the thing is, though, even when Horahan did put that response back to him, there is actually Villa fans on his tweet replying, still giving him shit, and he's just thinking, Horahan's done something to go out and sort of prove, say, look at me, I've done well for myself. And Villa fans are still giving him shit on that Twitter response.
That's insane. I mean, as we've always said on this show, even if, he hasn't had a great day or sometimes the game passed him by, whatever, you cannot dispute, as we've always said, he's got end product. He scores goals and he makes them. And at the end of the day, if that translates into the Premier League, then he's going to be very useful for us.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to pull one stat up that I did notice about Horahan from the game yesterday, is that he made 22 passes and he gave away 3, whereas McGinn, 8 throughout the whole game, 8 completed passes. And you look at that and you're just thinking, for the amount of shit Horahan gets, and obviously McGinn, he makes up for the game with being a pest and the other things that he does, but you just think, McGinn gets away lightly with air, whereas, that's a
McGinn's
solid stat.
McGinn's pass completion was 60%. Horahan's was 82.1, and 82 is pretty good, basically. I mean, Engels is 88.2. That was the best of any defender. The most shocking in terms of distribution, what was Tom Heaton doing? So some of his goal kicks went out for throw-ins. There was a couple and another two potential borderline ones. I mean, Tom Heaton, fantastic. No complaints of them. We'll get on to that. But yeah, some wayward kicking. Obviously, they were going for, as you mentioned, El Ghazi's decent in the air. He was obviously aiming for him to head it on.
Especially in the second half, I think it was. I don't know what it was about the second half. It just kind of just passes started going astray and it just didn't really go to plan. But yeah, it was a bit of a weird one.
I think it
was
just the pressure was getting to people, wasn't it? Because they knew that Spurs was...
Every time he had to take a goal kick, he was getting booed.
I joined in for that as well.
did you lead it at one point? Boo!
Come on, lads, stop singing about the Yid Army. Let's start booing this guy down here.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Have we spoken about the defence? I thought the centre-backs were immense. I mean, it's one of the best displays. I remember Gary Cahill and Liam Ridgewell. It was like the Alamo against Manchester United at Old Trafford once, where we had so many injuries that we played that pyjama clowning goal. And Corelli and Cahill and Ridgewell when they were like early 20s, and they were brilliant. And it was only, I think it was in the last minute, Solskjaer had a shot and it went through the legs of the keeper. And it was like, you just felt for those two guys because they got their chance. They did everything and the keeper fucked it up. Mm. Anyway, digressing, but that display by Mings and Engels, I thought, right, this season's going to be all right in terms of, you know, we're not going to be relegated, and you can bookmark this and save it for later if we do get relegated. I don't give a shit. I've got faith as long as they stay fit, because that's why you suddenly felt around, you know, 60, 70 minutes, we might actually do this, because if they get through Mings and Engels, then there's heat in it behind them.
The thing for me is that it just looked like every time, because like Spurs had a lot of corners, didn't have some 40 odd corners or something throughout the game. And every time they were putting it, it was just like a magnet to Mings's head. He was just getting to absolutely
the Spurs
everything.
Fan standing next to me said, he's fucking humongous. when he did one of those like head back, bang, you know, headers out directly from the corner. There's his catchphrase. Let's get that on a t-shirt.
Did you just like throw in a wanker just after that? Just something like,
yeah, no, I did,
a wanker.
Just to sort of could fit in.
No, but I think Mings and Engels, I think that's their first competitive game together, and they look so good against a good Tottenham side. I think every time they whipped in a ball, it's just head it away. And I think, was it their second goal, Tottenham? It bounced off both of them, which was really unfortunate. But I think that's definitely a positive to take from it. I think defensively, we were pretty good.
So the thing is with Engels, to me, is he looked like he's been playing in the Premier League all his life. He was so assured. And I mean, I mentioned off air, like even like where a standard like centre-back would be heading the ball out or trying to make a clearance, Engels was just taking it down on his chest and he was picking out passes. And it was really refreshing to look. I totally agree where you see the centre-half pairing of Mings and Engels and you just think, this is it. Exactly what you said. If we can keep these guys fit for the season, then we've got a great chance of sort of staying up or even progressing further.
You haven't got that situation where you've got a good keeper who's a bit unsure of the guys in front of him, or you haven't got where you've got good defenders and they're a bit unsure with a keeper and that leads them to make mistakes. You've got like the perfect, so they all like, you know, you could see they're all encouraging each other every time that either Heaton made a save or Engels blocked it or Mings headed out, you know, they were patting each other on the back and psyching each other up. So it's definitely, as you said about Engels, like who gets the ball and it's almost like he's already scanned the area. He knows who's behind him. He knows who's around. Mm. So he kind of instantly turns and he picks his pass. He's not just, you know, rushing it or booting it away or playing the obvious one down the wing.
Did you see, I don't know whether you actually sort of seen this well from the stands, but he made this one clearance where he kind of just kind of did like a flick back heel across the 6 yard box. And it was amazing. If you ever get a chance, look at the replay of it. It was amazing how he managed to sort of
we're getting into Paul McGrath territory here with back flicks and stuff.
he was that good, but you can just imagine, can't you, sort of concert and
sitting in the stands and going, oh fuck,
horse, yeah, going, yeah, fuck, I'm nasty.
I'm gonna have to injure him in training.
Just shaking your heads at it.
Right, I know what I'm doing on Monday. I'm going in two-footed.
Exactly.
What did you think, Mr. Stokes, about Jota when he came in? I thought, is this a case of he's good against lower opposition and he might struggle in this league because it's a bit, obviously, the pace of it, and he's playing, you know, real athletes are not going to give him a time on the ball.
I think it was a difficult time for him to come on, to be fair. It was the time where Tottenham were really, really pushing. I'm not sure what the score was when he came on, but it was at the time where they were really going for it. I just thought he looked a little bit weak. I think he gave away the free kick that Eriksen took and Heaton made that really good save. So I think that was a little bit naive from him. It was a silly challenge, but he just didn't seem to get his hold in the game. He didn't see too much of the ball. He didn't really have a go, but that's nothing. You can't take too much away from that because it was when Tottenham were really going for it. So yeah, it wasn't fantastic, but you can't really judge him on that. I think there's more to come from him for sure.
When Spurs made a substitute, they're bringing on a player that can probably get into any team in the world in Eriksen. And it was at the stage where Spurs were getting the upper hand and you just thought, this is going to be it, isn't it? It just reminded me of when we played Manchester United several times in the FA Cup. I think it was under Martin O'Neill at Villa Park. But United, I remember playing one game and I think they had another game coming up, maybe a European game. And so they rested Van Nistelrooy and Roy Keane. And I think Villa had the lead. We were 1-0 up. I think Barry scored. You know, we're sitting there, you know, everything's hunky-dory and we're thinking, we might have this. What, fucking foolish prick, leaving Keane out and Nistelrooy out. And then they started to warm up on the side and the whole 10 just And I was deflated just sitting there, you know, just watching it. And I was going, oh, fuck, we're fucked. And the whole Hull 10 started to boo when they saw them warming up because they knew it was coming. And United won 2-1. And sorry, I've gone on a bit about Man United there, but but it was the same with Ericsson. You just think, ah, shit. This is exactly what they need. This is who they need to bring on now.
Even when we scored, I kind of felt like that. Because as soon as we went 1-0 up, like the Villa pessimist in me was just kind of, I kind of celebrated. And as soon as I sat down, I kind of went, oh, that's it. We've just kicked the hornet's nest and we're just going to get spanked now. But the longer the game went on, it sort of got to, you know, Taylor was doing all right. And then it got to the half time and I was thinking, okay, all right, we might actually have this. And then obviously the longer the game went on, especially in the second half when we was back to the wall, we were defending quite well. I was thinking, this is possible. And then all of a sudden, like exactly what you say, you see Ericsson warming up and again, that's it.
Speaking about when McGinn scored, I was obviously in the Spurs end. So I was really disappointed when he scored. And, you know, I was almost in tears. So obviously I missed out on the limbs, but you were in rail seats, were you not, Mr. Stokes?
Yeah, I was a bit shocked.
What was the experience in terms of the celebrations? And did it feel safer?
It did. It did, yeah. I think the seats themselves were quite big, but the railings definitely helped. I think we were on the end of a row, so we were down the stairs anyway. But I think if you're in the middle, like there's no way you're going over that because I think the rail goes like above your waist. So there's no way you're flying over that. So yeah, I think it was much, much safer.
Yeah.
I think it's for the best. But yeah, the scenes when McGinn scored are fantastic. I was just going into the game saying, if we can keep it respectable and score a goal, I'll take that. And we did.
It's always nice if you're going to score a goal, for it to be the first, if you're going to get beat, for it to be the first goal, because there's still the belief and it obviously means something. But yeah, they had rail seats on both the lower decks, on both cop ends, so to speak. I think any new stadium will have them. It's basically future fitting them for hopefully the government in the next year making a decision to finally green light it to be standing sections. But anyway, that's another subject for another day. Is there anything else to talk about? I mean, we brushed on Douglas Luiz. I was kind of like almost had my eyes on him like player cam because I was like, all right, here we go. I think Smith could see we were struggling in terms of energy because we'd been chasing the game and concentrating so hard all game that it obviously Ericsson coming on fresh blood that he needed to put something in there, but we didn't really I can't understand what kind of player would come on to stem the flow of, you know, what Spurs were doing to us. But it'd be interesting to see. I think, as we already said, I think Hourihane will start. But I think Luiz, if he's ready, which he seems to be in terms of getting on, he'll get more than 10 minutes, I would imagine.
I think the biggest surprise for me was Trezeguet.
Yeah.
I mean, I mentioned sort of off air before that I thought I wasn't really too sure about him when we signed him. I weren't really kind of, you know, I didn't have that much confidence that he'd be able to sort of transfer from the dodgy Turkish league over to the Premier League. But I was really surprised. I thought in the first half especially, he did give us something different going forward. And you can see with his pace and he has got a bit of trickery and an eye for a pass. And he put in 3 or 4 really good crosses. And it was a shame really that our team hadn't really sort of caught up with him, I think.
It was a shame that Wesley was on the edge of our own 18-yard box when the crosses came in.
Yeah, on his arse. But no, I mean, I thought he was positive. And I think exactly what Max said, you know, to get a goal and carry ourselves like we did, I don't think you can walk away from that game with many negatives with the way we performed. But yeah, Trezeguet for me, he was one of the positives. Yeah.
I mean, just in summation, we're known as in the Championship as a possession-based team, and we had like 30% of the possession against Spurs, and that just showed. I mean, we were playing, you know, one of the top teams in that division, no doubt. I think it was a good test, though, because the way we stood up and you know, those first 70-odd minutes where we actually put seeds of doubt in even the Spurs supporters' minds was a triumph at the end of the day.
The way that we were defending and how compact we were throughout the game, I think we mentioned earlier on that the stats had something like 40-odd shots and only sort of like, there was only 7 or 9 of those were on target. And
sorry, we only deal with execs on this show, Mr. Goth. It was 31, 31 shots. Seven on target.
Well, I got the second bit right, but yeah, and the thing is, most of them were outside the area because that's all the that's all they could do. And because of the way we defended and how compact we were, we did limit them to shots from outside the air. And I think it was only later on throughout the game that they obviously they did get them for clear cut chances. And let's face it, two of their goals were through our mistakes.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I think obviously Grealish on the edge of the box, and even leading up to their first goal, and Ndombele scored. El Ghazi should have cleared it. El Ghazi should have cleared it way before the.
But I mean, obviously, you know, they're being told to play out from the back and play, you know, a controlled possession game, even from your own 18-yard box. And if you look back when Pep started at Barcelona and introduced that philosophy, Barcelona's, you know, some of their defenders and midfielders were giving the ball away, you know, sloppy passing, and they were resulting in goals. This is because it's all about, you know, you're learning the way of playing, so you're going to make mistakes as you get up and running. And so you have to kind of forgive the early stages. I mean, obviously, we live in a day and age where everything is under the magnifying glass and everybody gets jumped on social media.
Yeah.
You know, players will make mistakes early doors as long as you've got a bit of patience and actually there is an end result and we start playing out the back very comfortably. And I think in Mings, I mean, you saw that his pass for McGinn was sensational. I mean, that's not the first time we've seen that from him. But Engels is super cool, as we've discussed. So I think it will all click into place. It's just, it'll be interesting to see when he beds in the fullbacks, or if Taylor and Elmo actually keep them out of the team for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I mean that's sort of when it leads on to the Bournemouth game. You kind of think, you know, being at home, is he going to give Target the chance and bring Gilbert in? Who knows? But I think they've definitely done enough in the last game to keep their places. I think it'll be unfair to waste them at this point.
Right, and it's not forgotten, even though we're in the Premier League, and that mythical striker Scott Hogan has slipped down to the Championship. That's not going to stop us. The Scott Hogan touch count meter is here. It's finally been delivered from Africa, so it's time for another Scott Hogan touch count. Right, Scott Hogan touch count. Why are we continuing this? Well, because everybody fucking loves it, that's why. But also, it provides us with a chance to look at the Championship and what goes on. I mean, it's obviously the first game here, so we're not going to really dive into it. But it gives us a little Championship segment, so to speak. We're going to do, I think we're best of three. As I mentioned at the start of the show, the original rules, it was a bit basic. And people will get bored of that through the season. So we'll try to introduce some rules that build some tension. As I said, I had 75% of the idea in my head. I've completely forgotten that by the time I've actually got to this point. But we've got to do the best of three. I think what happens is you both get a guess. After the first round of the guesses, I will say who's closer, and then they get the first guess again, and then the next person guesses, and then the winner is known after that, whoever gets the closest, or if you hit it on the head. Does that sound like it makes sense?
That makes perfect sense.
Does that sound like an improvement?
Let's do it. yeah, we'll go along with it, we'll see.
But I was thinking, if you actually nail it on the head, the guest, then maybe in the next round the person forfeits one of their guesses. So there's a bit of a forfeit and a bit of reward. Does that sound like it works or not? I don't know.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just happy to be on it. This is a big deal for me. This is like getting on Strike It Lucky when I was a kid. This is huge. Right. So are we going on one game here?
So each round we'll have two guest stages. Okay. Let's try this one out. Do you want to flip a coin? Who's going first?
I don't mind. I'll let Jim go first. He's the
Jim,
guest.
Jim, you're first up on the hockey.
All right.
Oh, just before, I got a phone call, private number. Funny enough, like 5 minutes after Scott Hogan was announced to be leaving Villa. And anyway, I didn't even associate it. I just saw a private number. I didn't answer it because, you know, I don't know who it is. The private number rang again. So I thought, okay. So I picked it up and it was BBC Radio Stoke wanting my reaction to Scott Hogan going to Stoke City. I mean, my reaction is I don't care. So I said, look, you know, I'm going out in a minute. And they said, oh, we can patch you straight through to the, you know, live to the show now, like, you know, 2 minutes, whatever. I said, well, you know, go on then. So the first thing they asked, tell us about Scott Hogan. I said, what's he going to do for Stoke? And I said, I've got no idea because he's hardly played for us. And when he does play, he hardly touches the ball. And then I told him about the Scott Hogan touch count meter. And that was the reason I went on the show, was basically to announce to the city of Stoke, advertise basically the Scott Hogan touch count meter. So hopefully there's a few Stoke fans listening to this segment.
And actually, my appearance on BBC Radio Stoke, and also there was a Five Live appearance on Deadline Day, can be found in the Mom's Patrons bonus audio section.
Anyway, we've just explained the rules, which the guys have no doubt forgotten, and so have I. But we'll try to improvise as we go along. So Jim's going to get the first guess to the first question. And the second, the two following questions, I haven't even actually made up yet. So this is very live. Scott Hogan made his debut for the mighty Stoke City, two up front. I think they played a diamond, Stoke normally play. He played 60 minutes. It only took them 60 minutes to work out what a waste of money Scott Hogan was. I thought he'd have been off at half time. Sorry, we're being very harsh on Hogan here. How many touches did he have in those 60 minutes? First guess, Jim.
Ah, oh, Jesus.
I'm writing these down, by the way.
I'm going to go 11.
11 from Jim.
Which is huge.
Okay, I'm going to go 9.
It is tense because you've just fucked the rules up straight away. It is.
Oh, is it 10? Oh, for God's sake.
I'm calling that one as a draw. And we're going to have to think about new rules for that eventuality.
This is not living up to my dreams.
That was pretty good guessing in the start. Yeah, why didn't you just go 10? You'd have crippled him and you'd have been 1-0 up.
I wanted to mix up a bit. Oh, well.
Right. We'll go to the Villa-Spurs game. Let's enough of Stoke for a week. In the Villa-Spurs game, and I think next week we'll dwell a bit more on the Championship. But in the Villa-Spurs game, two players had the most touches in the Villa team. They had the same total. So Mr. Mings and Jack Grealish had the most amount of touches in the Villa team. How many touches was it? Jim, first again. Both players played 90 minutes.
I'm going to go 29.
I am going to go with... logical would be 30. I'll go 30. Let's go 30.
He's the closest, so he gets the first go.
Right.
What?
The rule is on the second round, whoever's closest... goes first.
Okay. Yeah,
so you've got a slight tactical advantage, I think. Two guesses.
So guess.
Those are the rules nowadays.
It was only
because in the first round you completely fucked it up by both going either side of 10. We're in the infancy of the new rules, and I hadn't planned for this to happen.
So I'll have another guess.
Knowing that you're the closest, and it's 29-30.
Yeah, I'm going to go 54.
So, Jim?
53?
Fucking hell, Jim. 52.
Oh, for God, that's not fair.
I love these new rules.
Come on.
They're brilliant.
I was very surprised. I mean, if you are a regular follower of this game, you'll know that the most touches is normally closer to 100. So I was very surprised by these early 29-30 guesses.
I have to admit, as soon as I said 29, I instantly regretted it and I knew he'd win it. But oh well.
Right, so the decider, 1-0 up. Right then, how many touches did Harry Kane get? Man of the match for Spurs, apparently. Scorer of 2 goals. And who's going first? It's Jim, because he won the last round.
I'm going to go... Oh, he was kept pretty quiet when he the first half. I'm going to go with 43.
43, first guess.
I had a number in my head which was much less than that, so I'm going to go 42.
That caginess is still in these new rules, isn't it? Max?
You might as well just go higher or lower.
Well, no, because I tried to switch up in the first round and it just cut
right,
it all up,
Max,
didn't it?
Max gets to go first. He is currently closest. This is like French boule, where you have to get as close as possible to the puck or whatever it's called. So Max is closest. He goes first.
I think... somewhere in the 20s, 26.
I'm going to go 29. Oh,
37, 2-0 to Jim. Beginner's luck.
On his debut.
Right. Well, congratulations, Jim. We will go back to the drawing board with the rules, but we're getting better, I think. They're getting more excited. Maybe there's going to be different rules every time the game is played. Who knows?
I thought the rules worked very well.
Yeah. Oh, I bet you did.
The opening round was something that will go down in history, where you both got either side of the exact number. So just going back to the experience of going to Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, which when it came out as the first fixture, which I thought it was a perfect way to begin the new campaign in the new stadium. What did you think, Max? Obviously, you've been to a few away grounds in recent seasons.
Yeah, I think we said in my video, we were like, oh, we used to go into Stoke, QPR, Brentford, and then this was like, wow. When we first got promoted, I think this was the fixture. I thought, that's the one I'm looking forward to going to. I think when we got there, we did a tour of the ground. We went around it, and I think we looked at the south stand. Is that what it's called?
Like, yeah, that's the one I was in.
Yeah, we looked at that from the outside and we're like, that's a bit crazy. And then we walked around to the sort of away end side of the stadium.
It's quite hard to get, quite hard to walk around that stadium, did you find?
Yeah, we went through like some sort of house in a stadium.
Yeah, I went through a car park and all kinds of
stuff. Yeah, underground car park we went through. It looks like a bit of a spaceship from that side.
Yeah, totally.
It's a bit of a funny one.
Totally.
But as soon as we got in, the concourse wasn't as big as I was expecting, because I know you posted some pictures on Twitter and stuff, and in the home end it looks massive.
It is, it's massive. And I think you can walk around any end, so you can say, I'll meet you in so-and-so bar. And even if you're on a west stand or the south stand, you can meet up. Obviously, at halftime, you know, it's a bit too far to go. But I went to the Inter game, and there was a few people hanging around after the game. And I, you know, posted a Instagram story saying, oh, look, people hanging around, like, you know, wow. But after the Villa game, the whole concourse was packed. I mean, it's up on my Instagram. Absolutely packed. Heaving. And outside there was a few this is outside the south stand, there was a few like street food places, and there's like, they've got like artificial grass outside, and people were sitting around, you know, in the last bits of the sun of the day, hanging around chatting. And you're just thinking, fucking hell, Spurs, or Daniel Levy, you've hit the nail on the head here in terms of churning in extra cash. I think, but unbelievable that it's just cram packed. And obviously it's a fucker to get to the bar, even though you think after a game, a bar that's as long as a football pitch, it's the longest in Europe.
I thought the away concourse wasn't as big as I was expecting. I know there was like an upstairs as well, and my mate had a beer from there, and I had a taste of that, and it tasted like absolute piss. It was dreadful. Yeah. So I wouldn't recommend getting a beer if we go there again. But the concourse wasn't as big as I was expecting.
People ask me, well, you know, why are you in the home end? That's because I have full access to the microbrewery. I have access to the goal line.
We did find one of those cups. We found one of those cups, and we were just looking at it like it was like something really special. It was like, oh, we've never seen one of these before. But the beer itself was awful. I don't know what beer it was, but it was crap.
To be honest, I didn't taste the homebrew, shall we call it. The actual stadium itself, what do you think about that? Because it's over the pitch. There's not like a racing track around it, like West Ham or whatever. You are in on the action.
Yeah,
the
absolutely. I think there's a lot of leg room. There's a lot of space as well between the seats. It was a lot of leg room, and the bars that we talked about, the safe standing thing was good.
Yeah.
I think it was really, really good. Happy that there wasn't a big fat racing track like there is at West Ham, which we'll enjoy later on in the season. But I think it was well designed overall. I'm happy with it. It's really good.
You know, it's literally like going into the future, isn't it, in terms of experiencing sport. Right, until who's next? It's now a couple of home games. Looking forward to them. Hopefully we'll get some points on the board. Although, what's the catchphrase been? As long as we finish 17th, I'm happy. I'll take 17th now. We're in 16th position. So those people...
Yes. Snap their hands off.
Come on.
Those people will be ecstatic. But I think the next few games we've got, in terms of the Premier League anyway, we've got games where after what we saw against Spurs, we should be pretty confident that we could get some decent haul of points on the board. But no pressure, boys. Please do, if you're listening on Spotify or Apple, please do give it a follow on Apple. Please do give it a review and a high five of 5 stars as well, please. And just follow it on whatever you listen to. Also follow Villa on Tour. Check out their Spurs video, because that will give you a 3D insight into what we've been talking about in terms of the stadium. And most of all, please do consider becoming a My Old Man Said patron to support the show and also get access to bonus podcast shows. Quick thanks to Patrick Downs, Sanjay Patel, and Mark Matthews for upping their pledges as well in the last week or so. Go to myownmansaid.com and click on the patron link on the menu bar. Thank you very much. Until we meet again, thanks as always to Max Stokes for joining us. And thank you, Jim, for joining us for the first time, the latest signing for the My Old Man Said podcast squad. And until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
My old man said.
I had to celebrate three fucking Spurs goals. The first time was there was a 1 second delayed reaction. It was like I was watching a dodgy feed or something, because everybody was, and I was like stunned inside. I was going, oh, for fuck's sake, when they equalized. And then I kind of faked the celebration like at least a second later.
Oh, well done, lads. Apples and pears.
Apples and pears. Yeah. Apples and pears. But by the time the third one went in, I was kind of on sync and doing handstands and all kinds of stuff. That was a joke, listeners, just in case you didn't get it.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.